Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank a three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, no, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there and looking for jobs, that's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Away and pass Hey there everyone, my name is Jordan from Happen Films and this is a $420 tiny house. Let's check it out.
This beautiful structure behind us is the house that we built over the course of about 3 months out of pretty much entirely recycled materials. So the total cost of the house is about $420 if you include the petrol money that went into it.
And the size is about 2.5 by 2.5 meters, 6.25 square.
We went by dumpsters from demolition sites, we looked on the website Gumtree, we ended up getting pretty much everything we needed to build a whole house just for free.
So we decided to try and build our home with just hand tools.
Yeah, we tried to. We didn't manage to in the end. There were a couple of things that were too difficult for us to do with the tools that we had and the skills that we had.
So we ended up having to use a power drill and an impact driver.
We had to make 5 purchases. We bought some cement for the foundations, some steel bracing tape because it was a bit wonky, some screws for the roof, a little tub of wood glue to make some window frames. We bought chains to hold the windows open. Oh, and we bought the 6 things. We bought some hinges.
So we were using salvaged paper insulation to try and line the whole house, and we ran out. We were just short and we didn't have enough to do the roof. But luckily we found this tarp in a dumpster. We were out a couple of months ago going through the local supermarket dumpsters looking for food, and there was this perfectly new tarp in brand new condition, and it's still in its packet.
I guess we wanted to challenge the idea that you need like a whole lot of high-tech tools and skills and knowledge to be able to build a house. I mean, that house is mostly built with a handsaw and a hammer. I think the main challenge we face is that neither of us has ever really built anything before.
A chook coop once.
Yeah, Rachel built a chook coop. I built a set of bunk beds once. We had to learn everything as we went. It takes it away a little bit from that professional need a whole lot of tools, need a whole lot of skills and a whole lot of different people. You need someone to lay the foundation, someone to build a frame, someone to paint it. The conventional building methods that are used, it's hard to imagine them being sustained more than 50 or 100 years in the future, just the amount of resources that they require and the importation of all kinds of things. We acknowledge that this kind of building can't really be sustained either, it's not an indefinitely sustainable technique, but using recycled materials and building much smaller spaces is something that can be sustained for a lot longer into the future. We live on a community, which means there are communal spaces for socializing. We have a communal bathroom, shower. For us, a house is really just a place to be able to have some quiet time in, a place to sleep in, a place to store our personal belongings in. Living a more of a shared communal lifestyle means that we can get away with just a really small house because we don't really need it for all these other things. It's great to have built our own house. It's like more than just having built a house. The house is cool. Yeah, don't get me wrong. It's great. But to have developed the skills and knowledge to do it again and to like share that with other people, I'm just, yeah, chuffed about the amount that I've learned through doing that.
Land ownership can be a huge barrier for people looking to live this way. And some people who see this may think that it isn't possible for them because they can't afford to buy their own land. The community that Liam, Rachel, me, and four others live on is owned by one family, and they allow us to stay on the land rent-free in exchange for developing the property by building infrastructure, planting veggie gardens, and taking care of the place. I feel that more scenarios like this will start to happen, where owners of unused land invite people to live on their property to develop a community and to do something great with the land. The challenge is connecting land owners with people looking to live this way.
Even if you've got no skills and knowledge, you can kind of just do that yourself. And it's much easier, it's much more affordable as well for people like us who don't have a great deal of money. It's much more accessible. I could just kind of build a much smaller space and then share your other spaces with other people.
By the time you met Blondon, how big were you getting? Like, how much were you buying on a regular basis?
Oh, no, maybe a couple pounds, 16 pounds maybe.
16 pounds.
Yeah, 8 pounds, something like that. At that time, pounds were going for 35,000 a pound, yeah.
By the time you met Blondon, how much cash did you have?
I don't know. I had a few hundred thousand.
A few hundred thousand. So you weren't a millionaire back then, but you were well off.
I was doing good.
You
were
doing good.
I was doing pretty good.
So how did the whole Blondon thing come together?
Well, see, we were still getting from the Blondon, but we wasn't going directly to Blondon.
It was a middleman.
It was a middleman. So the only thing happened when we met him personally was that the middleman had got cut out, which dropped the price even more. But we were already getting it from Blondon, technically.
Technically.
Yeah.
You just weren't talking to him.
I just wasn't talking to him.
Okay. So how did you end up meeting him?
I bought him.
You bought him?
Mm-hmm.
So you basically bought your connect.
Yeah.
So you told your middleman, I'm going to give you...
$60,000.
$60,000, and you introduced me to your connect. And you can walk away with that $60,000.
Yep. And then Blondon paid $60,000 as well.
To meet you?
Yeah, to meet me.
So the connect got $120,000 to essentially... walk away from that part of the business?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he got spooked, I heard. You know, somebody had got busted.
He was trying to get out of the game? He was
trying to get out of the game, so he felt, you know, he'd take $160,000, go back to Honduras, and live like a king.
$120,000.
$120,000.
And that's what he did? He left?
I guess, yeah, for a while.
Okay. So now you're working with the Connect. Blondon.
Yep.
How is that relationship different than your previous relationship?
We got a lot tighter, you know. Me and Blondon hung out a little bit together. You know, I would go over his house. The other guys were more meet on the street, switch cash for money, you know, money for drugs, and it's over. But me and Blondon, we kind of hung out. We talked about business. So we developed kind of what I thought was a friendship as well.
Okay. Now, Blondon is the one that actually took you to the next level.
Technically, yeah, and no, you know.
Explain.
I mean, we took each other to the next level.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
You know, I wasn't out here helpless and homeless, you know. When I met him, I had a few hundred thousand dollars, and I had clientele. I knew the streets, you know. I knew... all the shot callers from every hood in L.A., you know. So he helped, but, you know, not by himself.
According to some articles that I looked up, and you could tell me whether this is accurate or not, it said that you were making up to $3 million a day.
I've had days that I made $3 million.
You had a $3 million day.
Yeah.
Okay.
A few of them.
A few of them. Explain how you have a $3 million day.
Well, your big customers come through, a couple of them, and they drop off $200,000, $300,000. There were three or four spots that I had in L.A. where guys just stood out on the street that would make $100,000 a day, each one.
Each one.
Yeah.
Now, this actually built up. I guess you had operations in 42 cities?
I don't know how many cities. I mean,
a lot of cities.
We had a lot of cities.
All throughout the country.
Yeah.
So explain to me, and, okay.
You know, different people do their estimates and their calculations and all
right.
that stuff. So.
And I guess the other thing is that you moved $900 million worth of cocaine.
Or more.
Or more. Which, in today's dollars, is the equivalent of $2.5 billion. So you were moving.
You figure like this here. If you do 100 kilos in one day, that cocaine goes a lot of places. You know, a lot of people, they taking it, they putting it on airplanes. You know, they moving it around. Now you're talking about you move 200 kilos in one day or 250. You're talking about that's a lot of cocaine.
Okay. If you were to stack up 250 kilos right now, how big would it be? Would it cover this entire room?
No. 250 kilos is not that big. Maybe the size of that couch.
That's it?
Yeah.
And that's the equivalent of $3 million?
According to what price you're getting.
Yeah.
What time it is. One time I paid as much as $48,000 for a kilo. So... $3 million won't go for when you're buying them like that.
Right.
But if you're getting them for 10 a kilo, you can buy 300.
Okay.
So all that factors in, you know. And I paid as much as, I paid $3,300 for an ounce of cocaine. And if you add that up, you're talking about like $100,000 for 1 kilo. But for the whole kilo, I paid $48,000 cash for one, and I've also bought them for $9.5.
Right.
As low as $9.5.
So, how were you actually getting this much cocaine on a regular basis? Were you getting it once a week, every day?
100 keys every day.
You were getting 100 kilos every day.
My last 2 years, yeah, every day.
Every single day.
Oh, absolutely.
Can you say how you were actually getting it?
In the trunk of cars.
So Blandone would basically set
up. You'd have a driver to pull up wherever I wanted it dropped off, and they'd pull it there and leave the keys under the floor mat. My guys would get in it and take it to where I wanted it.
Okay. How big was your actual crew in terms of people that answer directly to you? Obviously, when you're talking about hundreds of kilos, it's going all over the world, and there's all types of people.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Like, if you see the special they did on CBS called LA Gang Godfathers, I think they had me surrounded by about 25 guys,
okay,
30 guys who were like they call lieutenants.
Okay.
But it varied from time to time, you know. Guys quit, get fired, you know.
Get busted.
Get busted, which was rare.
Why was it rare?
I taught my guys how to sell and how to avoid the law.
Okay.
So they were pretty good at avoiding the law.
How did you really manage a crew like this? Because when you talk about money, this much money, you're talking about drugs, you're talking about women, you're talking about violence, you're talking about gangs. And then you're also talking about law enforcement. How do you really manage a crew of this many people and keep it from just falling apart in an afternoon, which happens all the time?
The first thing you got to do, you have to really be humble in yourself and always look at situations from the other person's point of view. That's one of the things that I do. I always try to see your point of view first, because I know to you, the most important thing is your point of view. You don't care about my point of view. But your point of view is always important. So I usually go with your point of view, and most of the time is, how can I get food, shelter, and clothes?
Okay.
Those are motivating, really, really high motivating factors. So if you can provide those to most people, they'll give you their attention. I mean, you're going to run into some, though. That's, you know, you can give them that, and they still going to be, what did we call it earlier? We were talking about it earlier. I forgot what it was. We were talking about shady or something like that.
Yeah.
Or shysty or something we called it. Yeah. So no matter what you do, you still can run into those type of people. But, you know, you just be able to roll past it.
Okay. So you had 25 people, roughly, allegedly,
yes,
moving up to $3 million a day in product.
Some days.
On some days.
And there'll be days where there's $2
million. Yeah.
$1.5 million.
Okay.
$1.2 million.
They don't really portray Chicago like that. And he did a lot of funny shit with it, man. And it just made me laugh at certain moments. And I think that wasn't smart to do it like that.
We were sitting in and, like, you know, the energy just started getting thick between us. And then I was getting aggravated. He was like, oh, I think we should leave. And I was like, yeah, I think you should leave. So I was like, get the fuck out of here, you know what I mean?
Well, hey, folks, and welcome. Well, hey, folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you. I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college, and I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in. And so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need.
It's pretty well known that the cost to buy a house in a lot of major cities is insanely high. It's led to a lack of affordable housing.
Okay, I had to get control of my board. All right. Today's podcast, it's open mic. We can talk about anything you want to talk about. But I'm starting off with Queen Elizabeth. Queen Elizabeth, she passed away, transitioned, graduated yesterday at 96. And man, that's a hard, to get to that decade is spectacular. But to get all the way through it to 100 is another. But she made it, she did it over half of it, so 96, had a spectacular life. But one aspect of her life, and I just found this out this morning, and if you're on our Blog Talk Scrolling Marquee, I've got pictures of it. Queen Elizabeth was at one time an auto mechanic. And I got pictures in the Scrolling Marquee, and then you can look up in any search engine, just put in Queen Elizabeth auto mechanic, and you'll see other pictures, plenty of pictures, and then get to read about it. Because all of the royal family had to do two things as part of their training. They had to do military service, and they had to select some type of something that they would like to do. It can be anything, you know. But with her, auto mechanic. So that's what she was doing during one of those wars. She was an auto mechanic. All right. So my hat's off to Queen Elizabeth, because she can. It's one thing, you know, being able to change a tire, but she can get up under that hood oil changes and spark plugs and whatever else dealing with the engine, she was able to do that. So thus, today's title, Queen Elizabeth, Auto Mechanic. All right. So she was able to save you a couple of bucks. Other things that we have out here is, speaking of Queen, rolling blackouts in London. Now, this has nothing to do with the Queen, but this has to do with power. And if you want to see what's coming your way, you can start reading papers or news feeds from other countries. Like, so if London's doing rolling blackouts, and then they have rolling blackouts for electricity in California, some parts of California, more than likely, it's not a question of if it'll happen in your neck of the woods, but when it will happen in your neck of the woods. And if there is a blackout due to the grid going, the electrical grid going down in your neck of the woods, and I would say electrical as well as water, because there's some cities around the country where the drinking water, that the municipal drinking water coming from the city is not even safe to drink, even if you boil it. So I look at this as an age of preparation, and we'll bring some preppers on to help you get through it. But rolling blackouts in London, housing disruption, and there's been a housing disruption going on for quite some time now. You have people that, there are people that are earning $50,000 a year that they're renting rooms. You know, places like D.C., New York, Boston, Miami, maybe Chicago, Los Angeles, Seattle. You have people in those cities that are renting rooms, not renting a house, but renting rooms because of the outrageous pricing of housing. So housing disruption, solutions for that, power disruption, which includes electricity. What do you do? Well, here's a question today. What do you do when the government says no? When there's a natural, like, you know, when there was an ice storm in Texas, what, a couple of years ago, when the electrical grid went down, what could you do? Some people are relying on government for everything. And a lot of these politicians run on, well, you know, when I get in office and this is what I'm... The government can't save everybody, nor does the government have the resources to save everybody for everything. So what are you going to do if your local municipal water system, if that's how you get water? The water that I use every day is not municipal water. It's private. My water supply from a well, and we have our own filtering system. But what are you going to do when the government says no? If you're living in New York City, what are you going to do when there's no electricity? Or you can't drink the municipal water, and you go to the grocery store to buy water, and they're all sold up. Where are you going to get your water? What are you going to do for electricity? Because a flashlight with some batteries in it, it can only take you so far. How are you going to keep your refrigerator running? And let's see. What kind of skills did you have? The late Queen Elizabeth just passed. At least she had a skill set. You know, she could have taken that skill set, and if she had to, and she didn't have to, but if she had to, I mean, you know, I don't know how deep her skill sets were as an auto mechanic, but I'm sure she learned the basics. Now, we're talking about the I'm not talking about tire changing, which is fairly, a fifth grader can do that, but I'm talking about changing brakes, sparks, lugs, plugs, assess changing oil, assessing the fundamental basics under that hood of why a car is not starting and how to get it started again. I'm sure she had the basic fundamentals on how to do that. Which I don't have those skill sets. I've never changed the spark plug. Never changed oil. Oil seems like it's, you know, easy to do. But, you know, she knew how to change oil, which includes a new filter. The transmission of a car, I'm sure she knew something about a transmission and how to change the transmission filter, which is sort of like a specialized thing, transmission fluid. So Queen Elizabeth had a commoner's, or what we would call, or what they would call a commoner's. She had that skill set, and that's what she was doing during the war. And in 2022, because to go into a dealership, dealerships, when you go to have anything done in the dealership, it's expensive to most people. So she had the skill set where, being an auto mechanic, where she could have did certain things to the average automobile where she didn't have to go into a, you know, a dealership to get, you know. Now, granted, she had a rural lifestyle or whatever, but once again, during the war effort, like I said, that's why I put it on a scrolling marquee. Just put in Queen Elizabeth Auto Mechanic, and you'll see pictures of her working as an auto mechanic. And like I said, that's something about the royal family. The two things they need to do as part of their royal training is they do military service, but they also had to select a profession that they you know, they actually train in and work in and get paid. She, at one point, was an auto mechanic. So that's a practical skill set that's even useful today. Now, I can change my tires. I can change the windshield blades. And I know how to do fuses. But you know what? But the new cars, I don't know how they operate because I haven't had to change a fuse in the car in a while. So I don't know if that's the same. And I used to be able to do taillights, but I don't know what's changed with taillights today. But spark plugs, I haven't done. Changing oil, I haven't done. Changing the transmission filters, I haven't done. And you have to be real careful with that because if you don't know how to change the transmission fluid or the filter in a transmission, you can mess up your car. I know how to change a battery. All right, but there's so much more to be on. But I am by no stretch of the imagination an auto mechanic. She was. So, and that's the skill set. I think there are two skill sets I think people need to have basic coming out of high school. That's 12th grade. I think they need to know the basic fundamentals of auto repair, changing a tire, changing your oil, changing your battery, changing your windshield blades, let's say changing spark plugs. I believe those are five basic skill sets that a person should have by the time they're 17, 18 years old, or probably even as young as 16. If you're old enough to get a driver's license at 16, my belief that you need to know those basics about fundamental auto repair, and that's not even all of it, fundamentally speaking. I'm just saying those five things. When it comes to a house, I believe everybody should know how to put on a roof, how to repair a roof, put on a roof, the basic maintenance of a house, which includes plumbing, you know, how to install a toilet, You know how to install a sink. And that includes the kitchen sink, including how to properly, you know, if something gets caught up in the drain. And there are probably a few other things, but those, just basic fundamentals. So the royal family, and you take the late Queen Elizabeth, and her income was something like $18 billion a year, but she gives it all away. She gives away to, God knows, an infinite amount of charities and whatnot. But, like I said, you can read about it on your own. Queen Elizabeth, the auto mechanic, a skill set that anybody can get, and everybody, at least in Western countries, they pay for the skills of an auto mechanic, but it's a skill set that the typical person in a Western country does not have. She had it. So, and I'm bringing this up because we're in an age of disruption where, you know, you might not be able to afford a roof. I was talking to a friend of mine from high school last night. He just had a roof put on his house for $14,000 to $15,000. He got a discount because normally it would have cost him $25,000. Now he's retired and he gets a pretty good pension and he's had some money. He had some money saved up, so he was able to write a check for $14,000 to $15,000. A lot of people don't have it that way. So if you don't have it that way, what kind of skill sets do you have? Or what kind of skill sets are available in your immediate social network? So if you don't have anybody in your social circle that can put on a roof, that can change a toilet, that can swap out whatever needs to be swapped out on a car, an auto mechanic. Like, I know my stepfather, he worked at a vocational school. And they taught auto body and some other auto, you know, auto type stuff on a high school level. So whenever he needed his car done, he would just take it to the school and, you know, the kids would, you know, do whatever needed to be done. Because they were teaching that at that school. So if you don't have anybody in your social network that knows how to do anything automotive or any a number of things dealing with the trades or vocational careers or whatever they call them these days, then find out the local career center near you and start building up some social capital. In any event, all right, that's all I've got. Now, if you guys got any trending topics that you want to throw out there, 619-768-2945. Oh, another thing I want to point out was because we're in an age of disruption. All right, because once again, they're rolling blackouts for electricity in certain parts of California now. In London, there are rolling blackouts for electricity now. And during the pandemic, and this has told you the vulnerability and the limited capacity of any government around the world. In some parts of Southeast Maritime Asia, you know, they, you know, particularly when the pandemic was first out, you know, when the grocery stores were closed, then local governments were trying to feed people. They might get a food ration once per month. And if you didn't budget that, you know, allotment of rice or whatever else they gave you, then you were basically ass out unless you had a garden. So I'm saying all that to say this because a lot of people place a lot of faith in government. And my question is, particularly to the reparations crowd. What are you going to do when the government says no? What are you going to do? Right now, I mean, I haven't heard anything in a while. Flint, Michigan, there's some cities in the United States where the water, even if you boil it, is not safe to drink. So if the government can't help you, and the government can't help all people with all things, like, and some people believe that, what are you going to do when the government says no when it comes to water, reparations, food supplies, a source of income, medical treatment? What kind of skill sets do you have if the government says no? The TV show The Walking Dead, I think, is a good illustration of this. I mean, it's dramatic Hollywood and all this, but in the TV show The Walking Dead, the thing is, there's been a so-called a zombie apocalypse, and zombies are basically, the common denominator with zombies is, zombies, also known as the Walking Dead, they're consumers. They don't produce anything. They look for living creatures who have energy that do produce things and eat them, and that's how they keep on going. That's what they call the Walking Dead. So you have those existing. It's not as you know, glorified as it is, you know, with TVs and movies or whatever. So, but the thing is, there was no government, and then people had to ban. Everything was off grid. You had to get water on your own. You had to learn how to forage for food. We have people doing that now. You have people living in cars. You have people living in the woods. You have people living in vans. You know, boondocking. You know, if you don't know what boondocking is when you have a vehicle, you're living in that vehicle, and you've got a place to stay, you got a place to eat, you got a place to shop. This is all in the van. They don't really pimp out things these days. You have electricity, you have phone, you have your flat screen TV, and you can be in the middle of the desert somewhere in New Mexico and Arizona. Watch and having a Super Bowl party. That's boondocking. Yet there are people that are totally independent of the grid. And the grid is another name for government. So what are you reparations people going to do? Because like I said, the writing's on the wall. If they're rolling blackouts in California now, that's a good barometer. That's a good indicator that rolling blackouts will be coming to a city near you. Because inflation is not going in reverse, it's going up. London, they're having rolling blackouts. Buffalo, New York's had at least two rolling blackouts, not rolling blackouts, blackouts, within the last 10 years or so. Significant parts of Texas within the last 2 or 3 years, when they had an ice storm in significant parts of Texas, the electrical grid went out for at least a week. And it will go out again eventually. So what do you have one room available in your house that is totally independent of the grid? In other words, you don't need the government for food, water, air conditioning, whatever. Do you have at least one room in your house that can operate independently power-wise for lights, electricity, water, food? Do you have one room in your house where you can survive when everybody else has got their lights out? All right. Do you have at least one room in your house dedicated towards that? Also, do you have a generator that doesn't need gasoline? because when shit really hits the fan, you might have a gas powered electric generator. But what if there's no gas at the gas station? Then what are you going to do? So I recommend if you got a gas powered generator, put that thing on eBay or Facebook Marketplace, sell that, and use the money to get you a solar powered generator. Solar powered generators, number one, are quiet. They don't make the noise like gas powered generators. Number two, they're clean. Gas powered generators are toxic. You got to keep them outside in a well ventilated environment. Electric generators, you don't. Next thing, electric generators start paying for themselves from the day you buy them. All right? If you're entrepreneurial, if you want to make some money, start looking for, you can just do it here in the United States, start looking for communities that have, and people that have had the electricity shut off, all right, and, or rolling blackouts, and be prepared for the next total blackout of certain places. And get yourself together and buy you some generators, solar ones. So when a blackout happens in there, and it's not a question of if, it's a matter of when. And what, as a matter of fact, adopt this motto, this philosophy. You know, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. And for the most part, most Americans have to get ready. So what you need to do is you need to stay ready and look at some essentials that people will need, and they will pay for it. If you got a generator, matter of fact, and I'll land my plane here soon. It was some hurricane that passed through here where I'm at in Florida. And the next day, Publix was out. You know, you couldn't go to the grocery store because they didn't have any power. And a lot of people a lot of businesses didn't have power. And what they did, I'm going to tell you who had it going on. The Chinese food restaurants in my neighborhood, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, anywhere from a mile away from where I'm at right now, literally, to more than 5 miles. All right, I'm sort of like in the middle of them. And the day after that hurricane blew through here, there were lines of people at all of these Chinese food locations, carryouts, mind you, and they were feeding people in this part of Florida, at least in my neighborhood. All right, they had... Now, Publix didn't have a generator system. When Dixie didn't have a generator, I don't know what they have now, but they didn't have it for this particular location. 7-Eleven, but they had, once again, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. So, and I didn't hear, the couple of restaurants that I went to get food, you didn't hear any generators, so they might have had solar going. I don't know what they were doing, but they had enough power where they can cook food like they normally cook, but they were totally off the grid of the local power company. Totally off of it. A lot of people around here have their own independent water system, but they had their own power system for refrigeration, electricity, and all that. Food to think for. There's food for thought. All right. Anyway, it's open mic. And although the queen has transitioned to another form of energy, just remember, she was an auto mechanic. 410 area code. Your mic is open.
Hotel Brother LA, how are you? And how's everybody out there in your listening land?
I'm doing fine, and I'm assuming they are doing fine themselves.
Ever since I got the news about the Queen, I've been crying my eyes out. I mean, I really love that woman. And, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do without her being here.
Okay. All right. Do I sense some sarcasm in that statement?
No, I really mean it, you know, because, you know, she's done a lot for black folk. In,
such as?
Not only in the United States, but in the diaspora. She's really done a lot, her and her family and her ancestors. So, you know.
You say ancestors, that's kind of controversial then.
No, it's not controversial. I feel a tremendous loss. And when I get off talking to you, I'm going to continue mourning. But anyway, you know bullshit when you hear it, don't you?
Yeah.
So with that being said,
she was just one representative of the throne, which has a very controversial history.
Thank you. She was just a figurehead that the machine is still in place and it will continue. So you don't have to worry about that.
The machine is still in place. It's still in place.
Yeah. You know, she was the biggest drug dealer and the biggest landowner on the planet. Her family.
Mm-hmm.
The Windsors, right? They're the biggest drug dealers and the biggest landowners on the planet. So I don't think you have to worry about generational wealth for that family. But let me get back to where you were. You asked, what would the ADOS people do when the government says no?
Yeah, when they say no, because, you know, when governments, different governments, you know, they shut down. First thing, government, no matter where you are, really government has limited resources. And government can't be all things to all people. Although you do have some people that believe that government is that can solve all their problems. But government has resources.
I'm going to give you this, Brother L.A. The ADOS people are going to continue to do what we've always done. Make lemonade out of lemons. The government hasn't done a damn thing for us. So now you can take that and you can digest that any kind of way you want to. Since black folks have been in this country, we have always had to do for self and struggle to try and maintain a little bit that we've gained. So as far as I'm concerned, ADOS people can do whatever the hell we've been doing because they haven't done a damn thing for us. Now, I guess some of your conservative friends probably would have something else to say, but if they do, you call me back. Even when we try to build stuff, they have allowed there are people to come in and ravage and destroy whatever we've tried to build. So now, you know, you're talking to the wrong nigga here. And I use that knowing what the real definition of the word means.
Yeah, I know what the real definition of it means, yeah.
Huh?
The real correct spelling and the definition of, I know what that means, yeah. Out of Africa, Ethiopia, I think.
It came from the mountains of Kenya, the Moon Mountains, and it was the first name for a supreme being. It was the first name for God. But that's another story for another day. You might want to bring me in on that one later on. But anyway, I'm not concerned about what we black folks can do because we've had to do it all along since we've been here. Now, I will say this. I hope it does happen, because when it does happen, you saw what happened January the 6th.
Yeah, with
multiplied 300 times. Huh?
With the Capitol Hill thing.
Yeah, multiply that times 300 times. White folks is going to tear this motherfucker up when the government says no and all what you're describing happens. Now, I sent you something years back about what happened during the Great Depression where they had food riots and everything else, and white folks marched on Washington then. That's when Roosevelt had to come out with all of these social programs, socialism programs. That's why you got the unemployment. That's why you got the welfare. That's why you got all of these government programs, because they saw what white folks was willing to do when times got hard and they didn't have enough food in those food banks.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, you've already seen us. You probably haven't read about it. But the thing is, we already know what's going to happen. And look, black folks survived. You didn't
right.
see black folks in soup lines. You didn't see white folks out there trying to make it and everything. Maya Angelou said that the Great Depression had been the condition of the country 10 years before black folks even knew what was going on, because black folks were living just like they always lived. So now if you read your history and you're familiar with United States history and black history, you know that we've survived. And
right.
the thing is,
yeah,
all you
yeah.
need to do is just look at what happened. They had food riots. White folks were breaking in businesses and taking stuff. They were marching on Washington, and they almost tore Washington up then. They had to bring the military in to go in and bring those people to bear. So now, you know, you don't have to worry about us ADOS people. We're going to make it. So, you know, you throw it off on us. You better look at them crackers and what they're going to do, because we're going to make it. And look, this thing about what would happen is, you had a prolonged period of time where the infrastructure was devastated and you had no lights, no water, or whatever. I experienced that. When I first got back home from Baltimore, we had a hurricane, Irene.
Uh-huh.
And it wiped out electricity. It wiped out gas stations. You couldn't get gas. All the stores was closed. All the restaurants was closed. And I made it. And the thing is, what happened is, I didn't cook with electricity. We had a gas grill, and I heated by gas. And I had a gas tank, a 200-pound gas tank that I heated by. And all I did was just disconnected the gas tank, hooked it up to my gas grill, and we had canned goods. And my wife was able to go in and use the dry goods that we had, you know, the Great Northern beans, and, you know, we had the smoked meat and all of that stuff. And we made it throughout this period. Now, a lot of people was trying to scuffle and get stuff, but I didn't have to do that. Plus, we had stocked up on bottled water, too. So I've experienced that for at least a week and a half to 2 weeks. So that thing, you know, I was able to do that. I lived through that. So if you're talking to a fella that did that, and you know what? We didn't have electricity. So what we did, we used gas, we used lanterns, these battery-powered lanterns. And the thing is, now we suffered as far as he's concerned. We didn't have an air conditioner. For as the basics, we had the basics. Now, a trending topic I would like to get to. When Flint, Michigan happened, I thought it was a rare coincidence. Now we have contaminated water all over the place, don't we? You know, we have contaminated water here in Baltimore. And we have it, where is that other city that they have contaminated water? Jackson, Mississippi. Do you remember seeing the movie? Were you old enough to see the movie Two Down, One Down, Two to Go? By Jim Brown and Fred Williamson.
By now, you're all excited to run out there and convert a car to electric. But what car do you convert? A lot of times people ask me, can I convert any car?
Brother L.A., are you there?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. My primary phone went out. I can hear you clear, yeah.
I thought maybe what I was saying was too hot for you.
No. My landline phone went out, so I had to call in like you guys on another phone.
Well, did you hear the last part of what I said about the contaminated water? First in Flint, I thought it was probably a rare thing, a unique thing. Now we got contaminated water in Jackson, Mississippi, and contaminated water in Baltimore, which they've always had bad water in Baltimore.
Right.
Did you see the movie with Fred Williamson and Jim Brown called One Down, Two to Go?
No, I did not.
Where they went through the rednecks or the bigots was going to contaminate the water and wipe out the black population. And they were able to go in and stop them before they poisoned the water. And now that I see all of this happening, you know what? It seems like life is imitating art. I don't think it's a mistake that all of these cities that's predominantly black is all of a sudden getting contaminated water. Now, you can call me a conspiracy theorist if you want to, but the thing is, I don't believe this something that just happened on its own. And I know you got your boy over there saying, well, you know, it's because Democrats take over the city. Well, the thing is, you got governors of those states that's Republicans that's supposed to go in and appropriate money to get this done. Now, Jackson, Mississippi, they say it's been an ongoing thing. And the thing is, blacks weren't the mayors of those cities during the time that this water crisis was brewing and growing all the time under their reign. I think the first black mayor of Jackson, Mississippi was in 1997. And then they had a slew of white mayors and white governors that knew about this until the present black mayors there now. So when your boy come up here and says it's because of Democrats and black leaders, I beg to differ, because Snyder was a white governor in Michigan. I think he was. And I think, if correct me if I'm wrong, there's a white governor in Maryland now that's supposed to appropriate money for infrastructure. So the thing is, we black folks better get on guard and stop coming up with this black liberal stuff and this black conservative stuff and read the handwriting on the wall. And I get off and let somebody else get in here and chew on what I just said.
Well, I'm looking at, I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm getting ready to post this on our Facebook page so everybody can see it. A map of the ongoing water crisis in U.S. cities. Honolulu, Hawaii has a water crisis going on. Rio Grande Valley, Texas had a water. And make a very important distinction. This is a municipal water crisis. So you got
exactly.
Honolulu with a municipal water crisis, Rio Grande Valley, Texas with one, Jackson, Mississippi, Baltimore, Maryland, New York City, and Benton Harbor, Michigan. Now, hold on, if I can, I'm going to post this link on our Facebook page. Give me a minute or a second or so. Let's see. Now, what I look at, the common denominator is, if people are relying on municipal water, what they need to do is two skill sets. It's two fundamental skill sets that I think every person should have by the time they graduate high school. All right. Matter of fact, I've got to pick up these skills, and I'm in my 60s. For one, people need to know how to drill for a well. I think, once again, let's use 16 as the metric here. If 16 and you're old enough to get a driver's license, by 16 you should be old enough. The life skill that you should have is learning how to drill for your own water. The next thing along with that is, because in some areas, the water table might be just too deep to reach for whatever reason. The other one would be how to harvest rainwater purified so you can make it into drinking water. I think those are two life skill sets that kids to learn, and they're not going to teach this in school. I mean, I don't think they will. They're not doing it now because they did that. If that's included in civics, but government, they want you to rely on government. But wait a minute, let me. All right, I just posted our Facebook page is. It's My House TV. It's My House TV, and I just posted map where the ongoing water crisis is happening in the United States. What I should say. It's not so much a water crisis, it's municipal water. Where I'm at right now, we have municipal water, but no matter what happens to here and where I'm at, I'm on a private system. Now, with that said, because municipalities can go into the water table just like you can, so then you need to have a backup system where you know how to harvest rainwater, and that way they haven't figured out a way to control the sky yet. Not yet. Okay. So those are two skill sets that I do recommend because once again these are what you see happening in on this map is coming to a town near you. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. So, and you know what? And in Texas, well, you know, it's not the whole state of Texas. It's just, in this map, they just point out one city. But, and it's an amazing amount of water. Like, if you've got 4 acres of land, during just on a normal rainfall, there's over a billion liters of water that'll fall on that land. So, you know, is there any need to go buy bottled water from a store? I'm just saying. 407, your mic is open. 407, are you on mute?
Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. Grand Rising, this is Diaba in Orlando, and thank you, Beasley, for bringing in some history and truth about the queen, the colonializer, as many of my Facebook friends are calling her. And, you know, I don't know if you realize it, but she's been dead for a while. My sources have been telling me Queen of England been dead for a while, but they've had a double in there for whatever reasons, because this is a multidimensional chess game. And they've been waiting for a day to announce that she's dead, but she's been dead for a few years. I think 2018 was the last date I heard that she had died, and they've just been covering for her. The other thing is, you know, there was a black queen, Charlotte, and there was one before her who was also black. They might be considered mulatto. But those were the first black queens of England. And Queen Charlotte had something like 12 or 15 children. So Queen Elizabeth is one of the great-grandchildren of the black Queen Charlotte. But over the years, there has been so much pedophilia activity, child trafficking, colonialism, you name it. When Queen Charlotte was on the throne, she was taking her children and feeding them a certain way just to avoid, I forget, there was some kind of corruption with the food system. And I had no this because I had a guest of an author of a book by Queen Charlotte. I had her on my show one time. And she told me all the history behind it. And she had 15 children. So Queen Elizabeth, who's been dead for a few years now, was one of those great-grandchildren from Queen Charlotte. So we're just seeing the play out of the elite's plan to bring in what they're saying is going to be a whole new paradigm with Skylink satellites running a lot of the things that we've been used to, banking, voting system. The Skylink system is going to take place, the place of a lot of systems we've been used to and comfortable with. But the thing about the Queen Elizabeth, we should be applauding her death whenever it took place, because that was, this has been one of the most corrupt reigns, with her sons being caught in pedophile activity, drinking adrenochrome blood and all this. It just got worse and worse and worse from the Black Queen. It just goes to show you when Blacks give birth to albinos and European bloodlines, that things usually get worse as the children get rebellious and go crazy for some reason. So I just wanted to bring out that history in case everybody was unaware of it. Don't be fooled by this, all this charade. Oh, the queen just died. No, she didn't. She's been dead for a while, and we've just been we've been scammed again or bamboozled again with their plan that they're working out. So shit's going to hit the fan, folks. You're right about preparing your house for no food or whatever. I got plenty of food in my backyard called parsley. And if you live in Florida, it's abundant, a little flowering plant that you can eat. And it's rich in nutrients, so not to worry about food and lights and all that. We just got to be prepared.
Okay, well, you said she's been gone for how long?
2018. Another source I read is 2020, maybe. But she didn't just die. No fault for that. They got doubles all over the place. People been, in fact, there's a lot of politicians have been wiped out, and they just, their doubles are walking around. They've already talked about Biden. That's not the real Biden that we'd be seeing all the time. But you can believe what you want. But they're just playing their game, their chess, multidimensional chess game with us. And we just got to become more sovereign and independent from this psychopathic government.
What's your take on the water crisis?
Well, again,
in certain areas.
Yeah, I just heard about Mississippi. There's a saying out, all the millions of dollars they're giving Ukraine, Israel, and then Mississippi asked for help, and they said, don't drink the water. That's all they say. They don't give them no money. But this whole system is so corrupt. That's why we have to withdraw from this government, dismantle it if possible. But there's this is corruption at its best, in my opinion. The water system, the whole system is, all this corruption is just coming to light. See, in fact, I would say the problem with the water and all that, it's just being revealed how corrupt the governments of this country are, and if not the world. That's how I feel about that.
Now, there's
billions of dollars to foreign countries, but in this country, Mississippi can't get clean water. And you know, you probably heard about that guy who's making water out of air. He's got a machine. I think I sent you that article. He's got a machine he took to Flint, Michigan, that you can make water out of air. So let's get going with that, the technology. Let's develop and build that up, because you can't depend on these governments.
Now, I got a question for both of you. let me see. Here's the headline. D.C. Mayor Bowser declares public emergency over thousands of bus immigrants. Let me get the article.
And Chicago, too, I would imagine. They're busing them to Chicago, Texas. We busing folks up there. They want all these...
Here we go. Washington, D.C. mayor, and let's throw in Chicago, Muriel Bowser declared the busing of migrants to the nation's capital a public emergency yesterday, as over 9,000 asylum seekers have arrived in the district since April. The declaration authorizes Bowser to establish an office of migrant services, which will provide support and services to migrants being sent to Washington, D.C. from Texas and Arizona. The district will initially allocate $10 million for the creation of a new office. Long story short, because this is happening in other cities besides D.C., you just mentioned Chicago. That's one of the reasons why D.C. is no longer Chocolate City.
These are just political games. You got a Republican governor in Texas. We got DeSantis here, and they're going to ship these migrants up there because Biden's letting everybody in the country free and giving them all these benefits, and all these Republican governors are saying, okay, we're going to solve it. Let's just ship them up there where what is that zone called up there where, you know, all the immigrants can go? They're just following the political energy.
Yeah, but now we're in Florida. Miami is 70% Latino.
Right.
They run Dade County. So, it's so diversified down there. You got not only Latino, which includes Brazil, the Dominican Republic, Colombia, and then you got a healthy dose of Russians down there, too. So
we're watching this political game play out, L.A. It's like, do you want to be involved in that? It doesn't affect me personally. So I'm just passing the popcorn.
No, it doesn't affect me either.
So I'm just passing the popcorn on that. You know, it's kind of entertaining that Biden is letting all these immigrants in the country, and then here's the governor saying, okay, well, we're going to ship them up there to your Democratic states and governors and all that. And it's just like a Hollywood movie right now going on. And then pretty soon they're going to be putting more fear out there about the monkey thing. And so we can just – it's not affecting me because I know where I am, who I am, and all that, and I have security here more than on one dimension. So I'm just watching this show play. I don't watch the news. But every time it comes up on my phone, I'm like, interesting, and then just keep scrolling because it's ridiculous at some point.
Right. Beasley, any thoughts on the migrants being shipped to certain cities?
Well, you know what, Brother L.A., that's why come I'm so hard on you and conservatives like you and liberals that have the same mindset that you have. See, when black folks ask for something, well, we don't, there you go, depending on the government again. There you go with your hands out. I just left Brooklyn. They have shipped over, I think, I forget the number of thousands of Hispanic immigrants into that city. And they already have appropriated $300 million for their housing. Listen to me carefully. $300 million to house them in hotels. And they're going to give them another
$300 million. Right?
Say what?
And that's just in Brooklyn alone, right?
That's just, in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Now,
okay,
and they're going to appropriate another $1 billion to get them settled. Now, black folks been there for I don't know how long, needing services, but they don't have any money. See, every time black folks ask for something, we ain't got the money. You know what? You're throwing money at a problem. That's what you're asking us to do. Now, I sent you a text, I think some months back, and I showed you where they sent the Haitians back to Haiti that had never lived in Haiti for years. They sent them back to Haiti because they lived in Hispanic countries, and they had people on horse whips and horses whipping them and everything else, but they flew them back to Haiti. They didn't let them come in here. But they have been systematically shipping Hispanic immigrants all over the country. And the thing is, you know, when black folks say something, oh, hey, there you go again, depending on the government. Now, these people are going to get settled. They're feeding those people, too. I was in Brooklyn, saw it firsthand. And everywhere they go, they make sure that they appropriate money to settle these people in. And the thing is, I don't hear not one black conservative raise hell about this going on. But now black folks, it's the peanut gallery coming out. And look, those people down there in Florida, I think I told you the story. When those boat people was coming over here from Cuba, a white woman told me she was pissed off. She says, look, she says, I've been here for years. Now, she's white. And she says, you know what? They haven't given me a darn thing. So just as soon as those people hit shore, there was a person on their banks waiting for them to give them $25,000 to get settled. They gave them a voucher to go in and find housing. And they gave them a voucher to go and get furniture for those housings. And they also gave them money in case they wanted to start a business. And everybody praised how the Hispanics went down there in Florida and just on their own created a little Havana. But you never hear anybody say anything about that. The Vietnamese came over here, took over the fishing industry down there in Louisiana and Texas. The government bought them boats and everything else. But when we ask for reparations, you got people out there, well, you know what? The thing is, how do you determine who's supposed to get it? Where's the money going to come from? But they always find money, don't they? Israel and Egypt been getting $3 billion a year ever since the 60s to go in and do ever what they want to with it. Nobody has said a word. And the thing is, what they're doing, they're quietly executing genocide on us through birth control, poison water, shootings with police, and God knows everything else they can use to get rid of us, but they're replacing us with these Hispanics coming in. But you saw what they did to the Haitians. They couldn't come in here. They had to send them back, get the hell out of here. Whenever Haitians try to come in on from the Atlantic Ocean, from Haiti, they push them back out there in the middle of the sea for them to drown or either die from thirst or ever what have you. But, you know, we never hear black conservatives, and you never hear liberals talk about the injustice that's going on here. But all of a sudden, you see all of this going on. Now, I want you to raise hell about them getting handouts and raise hell about them getting free money, just like you do about ADOS people talking about reparations for the injustice that's been done to us. I want to hear.
Well, I don't know who is us you're talking about.
Black conservatives. And L.A. talks about it all the time. He knows who I'm talking about. Black conservatives.
He talks about injustice to us.
The black folks that came here and worked for 400 years for free under duress. That's who us is. Now, I don't know who you are. I'm talking about my forefathers and foremothers.
Okay, but my ancestors were Native Americans and slaves. I have a mixture. So today I can't just put everybody in one category because I have now grandchildren whose mother is Colombian and their father is black. So I don't understand the us and we are being discriminated against. Every individual has a brain and opportunities. When in Florida, you better be bilingual in Florida if you want to have a chance of getting a job as you grow in this state, because most of the people in Florida are not only Hispanic, but they come in from Brazil speaking Portuguese. And since this is a tourist state, that you got the people who are hiring want their employees to speak more than one language. So the solution is, okay, every black person growing up in Florida, you better take Spanish or maybe Portuguese. because that's the competitive market you're going to have to deal with. It's just the reality. And it's not about we or they or us. It's about the reality of people here in this state who are mixed in every way, black, Hispanic, Portuguese, Brazilian, Dominican Republic. We got all races of a very diverse group of people here in probably just about every state. So it's not about we or them or us or they. It's about today. The reality is this. You need to be speaking to more than one language. We've been too comfortable with this English. The reality is now you got people here who speak more than one language. So you got a lot of competition. It's not about discrimination in my mind. It's just reality. Speak or learn another language.
Sister Viana, I could give a flying flip about everybody else.
Let him speak, Viana.
We'll get the ball back.
I could give a flying flip about other folk, about diversity. I'm talking about black. That's who I'm talking about. Now, wait, hold it. Let me say this. We can speak several different languages if we want to. That has nothing to do with the reality I'm talking about. I'm talking about the genocide that's being carried out against us through Planned Parenthood. I'm talking about the injustice that's going on out here where you can walk out. Now, you may be mixed, but I tell you what, if you get into a wrong situation in a wrong place, you can get shot just like anybody else. Now you can claim your diversity if you want to. But when people look at you, the first thing they see is a black woman. Now, you mixed, and I bet you on your license, you probably got Negro or black or African American. Now, I don't know if you drive or not, but you're classified as black. And the thing is this, when you black out here in this country, you better get it for yourself. Now, you can talk about us being babies and everything else, but you know what? Black folks survive on their grit and their determination to stay alive. Now, all of this stuff about diversity and all of that crap, you can take that and flush it down the toilet with the rest of that stuff. I'm talking about what we got to do to survive. And the thing is, I'm looking at how everybody can get something around here. But when black folks ask for it, we don't have a right to it. Not that we're asking for it. I'm talking about what we deserve. And the thing is this. Nobody says a word about all of this stuff going on, about all of these other people coming in here getting handouts from the government. And the thing is, nobody has any criticism about that at all. And not talking about Israel and Egypt getting $3 billion for the last, 30, 40-some years? So now you get off that stuff about what you're talking about. You can take that and flush it.
Well, who's giving Israel all that money? It's the government, United States government.
The government. All you got to do is just look at the foreign policy. That's who's giving them the money. And look, let me give you this here, Brother L.A. and Brother Sister Viata, because I don't want to be harsh. Guess who the biggest recipients of Section 8 subsidized housing is in Brooklyn and Manhattan and the surrounding areas?
Jews.
Jews are the ones that's getting all of the Section 8 money and all of the HUD subsidies. But we don't say a word about
it. Hold on. Are they getting it as landlords or are they getting it as recipients?
As recipients and landlords.
Okay.
I can send you the article, but nobody says anything about them. And look, they're supposed to be the ones that's the most progressive. And not counting the Hispanics, because the Hispanics getting it too. But I'm just showing you the hypocrisy of black folk that's regurgitating white folks' talking points. So now that stuff you talking, you can take that and shove it.
Well, that's what I'm more concerned about my grandchildren growing up to be healthy and not prejudiced or racist, you know? That's where your generation, you're talking about people who are prejudiced and racist. I'm not having that in my household. My grandchildren do not judge people by the color of their skin. They judge them like Martin Luther King said, by the character, because they got They got Japanese, they got a Korean stepfather, they got a Colombian mother, and all their relatives on that side are all pale skin, and then all the relatives on my side are dark skin. Why would I even talk about race to them? You got to think about the black people. That's just
the United States is tribal. The United States, no matter what you're trying to do with your grandkids, it's tribal. And the reality of it is, we got another call in. 314, your mic is open.
It's a new generation. You know, my sons are not.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Deanna.
Who is the old Pianki? Hi, Pianki.
I didn't know you knew that much about this. I didn't know you knew that much about these situations. It's us we and all that crazy mess. Ain't no such thing as that.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. You know, you are a blessing to Naima's show, by the way, with your broad perspective and knowledge. And they know America is not paying any Jews, Holocaust victims. Nobody can show that. Why would they? It didn't happen on U.S. soil. Now the case when they cooperated with France and made available something that France paid. But what does America owe for that? That's another thing. We let these federal government get away with murder. And blacks is mixed. So if they give you $100 for a pure black coming straight from slavery, then that you've been adulterated and wasn't raped, it was probably consensual. So what do you get now, $50? And then why are you going to get $50? If you sold cows enough to become a slave back on the African continent, well, that's in your blood. You got a blood of callousness, a blood of we don't want you no more and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, what else going on, y'all?
Whatever you guys want to talk about, you know.
Brother L.A.
Yes, sir.
Am I still muted?
No, you know what? Everybody's mic is open. Everybody's mic is open.
I want all of your listening audience to hear this stuff. I want all of them to hear this stuff and hear what I just heard. You see, that's what happens when you don't have an identity. See, nobody has to tell other racial ethnic groups who's black and who's not. And the thing is, just because you mix, you're classified according to the socio-political structure. So nobody's confused out here except those people that you just heard. And the thing is, wherever black folks are, we're out here we're making it. See, the thing is, we don't get credit for surviving. But the thing is, this diversity stuff, see, all of that's to try and confuse people like you just heard. And the thing is this, if we fall for that, and some of us do, then what's going to happen is you're not going to go in and try to build something on your own and organize to make sure that you practice the laws of nature, which is self-preservation and the survival of the fittest, because you're always trying to fit in. And when you're trying to fit in, everybody else is practicing. Like you said before, everybody else is tribal. Everybody else is forming themselves in a wolf pack. See, when these Hispanics get over here, they don't say they're Latino American. The Chinese don't say they're Chinese Americans. Jews don't say they're Jewish Americans. They use just the first part. I'm Latino. I'm Jewish. I'm Chinese. But see, when you get into this diversity trap, the first thing you do is, well, we're all God's chillings, and we all must love one another and we almost share, and nobody's sharing with black folk because we fall for this diversity crap.
We have to listen to a lecture.
Everybody, this black is mixed. Yeah, well, you're right. Everybody has some type of racial mixture in them, but we're still classified as blacks and we're treated as blacks. So now you can take your stuff and flush it down the toilet too, Brother Pianki, okay?
Hey, man, look, I told you about putting my name in your mouth. Now, you want to do it, I can tell you where I live. But, L.A., let me ask you a question. Where were you born? Where were you born,
Pianki? Say that again, Pianki.
Where were you born?
Oh, Washington, D.C., Freedman's Hospital, third floor.
Viata, where were you born? You were born in the United States, weren't you? So it ain't no coming over here. We already Americans. That's why we say we're Americans. We were Americans. And Africans that were brought here through slavery were not mixed that I know of. It might have been. I don't think they were. I mean, anyway, mixed, as you talk about, has nothing to do with, to them, with white blood. It was mixed with when they said, well, your mama was this tribe and your daddy was that tribe. That's what they was talking about, mixed. And how in the heck you going to, who's going to pay the daggone reparation? Reparation for what? What individuals done, it was a crime. Hey, look at all the times that the ambulance is being called out there in that Chicago. Who's paying for all that? It's so daggone messed up that they about to go broke.
Who's paying for those immigrants coming in here and being placed in different places and paying for them to stay in hotels and paying for their food and lodging and everything else? Who's paying for that, Brother Pianki?
I'm already here. I ain't got to stay in no hotel, no motel.
Answer the question. Who's paying for Israel getting $3 billion and Egypt getting paid $3 billion a year for the last 30 years?
That's foreign aid.
Answer the question.
That's foreign aid. I'm totally against it. I'm against welfare in some cases.
Thank you. And I am too.
What you need to do is if you go to Planet Fitness and get strong, and get you some more education, and learn a skill to make some extra money to go with your depleted pension, apparently.
And look, let me ask you this, brother Priyanka, do you drive? What's your racial classification on your license since you mixed? What, and Sister Viana, answer this question. What did they classify you as on your driver's license?
Native American, my brother. I'm a Native American. Thank you.
Oh, okay. So you don't have a nickel in this quarter. So now when you talk against reparations, you just stick to your people. Your people already got reparations.
I wonder what's on Nigeria. I'm going to ask my Nigerian friend, see what's on their driver's license.
No, I asked you. What is on your license?
Wasn't black. That's some... What in the hell is black anyway? Rachel, what's her name, L.A., out there, and that said that she's a member of the NAACP?
Rachel Dolezal, who's trans Rachel.
What is black? In Africa, nobody classifies themselves as black. That's some daggone new phenomenon that they use here in the United States. Go get you another education to get you another part-time job.
Hey, Brother L.A., ask him to answer the question. What is your classification on your driver's license and your birth certificate? That's all I want to know.
It's what I put on there when I filled it out.
No. What's on your license and what's on your birth certificate? Answer the question.
My name on my birth certificate is spelled P-I-A-N-K-I, the first name.
What did they classify you as? Answer the damn question.
They classified me as an American.
No, they didn't.
Wait a minute. Did you ask me? So you know it was a no, they didn't. What the hell are you doing asking me for?
Because I wanted you to tell the people what you classified is on your birth certificate and your driver's license. That's all I asked.
You guys, that's what you're... And y'all need to cut that stuff out, man. Tell the people that what they can't do and what they. I appreciate all my white male iron workers that made me millions of millions. I really appreciate them, L.A. Came out there in the cold weather and the hot heat and put up my building, dedicated. We partied with each other and celebrated with each other, cried with each other when somebody died. Great Americans they were.
And we black folks are proud and proud Americans. And we have some pride about it.
We got people that's black that's proud Americans. What else they going to be?
No, we're proud. You say you're Native American.
What do you want to say, L.A.?
You're Native American. Huh?
I'm sorry.
What do your driver's license say, L.A.?
You know what? Let me go look right now. On my driver's license, there, it's got my name, address, date of birth. When I had to renew, there is no ethnic identification on here other than my picture.
That's right. Mine too. I don't have no bag, no worded definition. That's another trick. These tricksters, these old tricksters try to pull on you.
I'm looking at mine right now because I had to get a replacement because I lost it. But
right.
I'm looking
right.
at it. It's got my sex on here, male. It's got my height, but it does not have no ethnic classification whatsoever on this. And I got it in my hand right now.
Do they have a star on your
life? Yeah, I got a star on mine, real ID.
Okay, that star classifies you whenever they need to come up with some information about you. It's a digital classification that they can go to find out what race you are. But now, also LA, what is on your birth certificate?
Oh man, you know I gotta go to DC and get a new one. Cause I don't know what happened. I did to the last one, but
I don't have to guess.
But more than likely, it did identify me racially on that.
I know darn well it does, and his too, and hers too. Now, she's a Native American. I want to know what tribe she belongs to.
That's the question I was thinking of. Yeah, you know, like, what tribe you belong to?
Why are you asking people these questions? You see, it's slick, man. They take your conversation, your shows into a whole different direction.
No,
I'm telling you the truth.
I want to point out the
You know damn well. Why do you think that my driver's license both got pictures on? I don't have nothing about no black.
And your picture shows
full. What is black? Yeah. Black is not a biological makeup.
Sure it is.
Biological, well, you black.
On this, I'm looking at it. The diversity socially is one thing, but the diversity when it comes to business, because all these little, I got, you know, these all right, put it this way, all the Latino restaurants in my neighborhood and all the Chinese food restaurant, when I just had some Chinese food for breakfast this morning, leftovers from yesterday, they're not going to hire any black people. You know, it's just not going to happen.
Well, that's not true, L.A., because we had a Chinese restaurant here in Maryland.
Oh, they might hire a delivery person.
Now they had black
folks. Right, around here, they might hire a delivery person, but the people that work in these little towns and the Latino business around here, the family members they're the vested interest owners in it. If they hire somebody, the only black person I've seen hired around here, every now and then they might hire somebody black who's a delivery person.
Down there near Southern University, they have a Chinese restaurant. I went to that long time ago. And they had black person working in the place. One, matter of fact, the one was on the cash register. That was back during the time of right before the Million Man, Million for Reparations one.
All right. But hiring to be on the cash register is not the same as being one of the vested interest partners in the business. Big difference.
Yeah, but you don't know that entirely. You just talking.
That's true. Because I don't ask, and I'm not in their business like that. You are right. I do not know
there
that entirely. I'm just going by top.
Dave Stewart, owner of Worldwide Technology, which deals in electronic technology equipment. I'm sure he's got some business going on with some Chinese people, and probably I know he's got something going on with Japanese. That's not true. Why don't we tell people that? That's why I don't let my grandson listen to this stuff. Well, actually, I don't. He's grown. He knows better. He asked me, Papa, why do you listen to that?
Well, you
know what, Brother L.A.?
I'm sticking with this. People, not only in the United States, and I've been to 13 countries, so and that's not a whole lot, but from what I've seen inside and outside the country, on a wholesale basis, people are tribal.
Of course, absolutely. That's right. So we all agree on that.
I ain't a member of his. And I ain't a member of his tribe.
And good. We don't
and
want
you.
Know,
that's all right.
No. I don't want him. I don't want him in my tribe, because if I ever find out somebody is in my tribe, you know what? Bring out the
If your complaint is a representative of your tribe, I wouldn't want to be.
Thank you. So that feeling is mutual. But Brother L.A., you see the foolishness here. Now, the thing is, that's why you can't get black folks to come together, because, see, we've been soaked in this propaganda that we're all one. We're all Americans, which we supposed to be. Now, we're all Americans when a war breaks out. But just as soon as the mission is over, then we go back to our different corners, except some people. You know, because some people, you know, they can blend in. But I bet you the fellow that's talking over there, I bet you some kind of way he's run into some of these things. But he's not knowledgeable enough or sophisticated enough to understand what's going on around him. That's why I come out works with him all the time, because, see, I pray for that fellow. And I pray for Sister Viata, because the thing is, this kind of thinking is going to lead to our annihilation in this country.
Well, Claude Anderson, the piece I play practically every morning to start this program, and I know, like, what, Viata, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
I want to know what tribe is talking
to. My take, socially, I'll hang with anybody, socially speaking. All right. But with, like, what I read about what's happening in Washington, D.C., diversity, I'm looking at what Claude Anderson said, diversity is not our friend. It will wipe us out. Washington, D.C., where I grew up, has gone from 70% black to barely 43%, and it's shrinking. So she just, now
well,
this is the mayor of Washington, D.C.,
LA.
a black one.
I'm very interested in that. Why did they move?
Well, they're moving to D.C. She just said.
No, why did a black? So are you saying that they are pushing blacks out and coming knocking on the door saying you got to move? I mean, what's causing these?
That's a whole nother podcast. Why blacks have moved out of D.C. is a whole. That's a whole nother podcast. A lot of them can't afford the high property taxes. They can't afford the high water bills. It's just a lot of things they haven't been able to keep up with inflation.
Is there blacks there in D.C. that's paying the large rent? They paying their water bill, unlike the people down there in Jackson, Mississippi, like the ones there in Detroit wouldn't pay the water bill. So are they paying?
They're not paying. They're moving out of the city.
Are there black people moving into those gentrified areas?
No.
They're moving in at a much slower rate. Put it this way. The mayor of Washington, D.C., now this article just came out yesterday. Over 9,000 asylum seekers have arrived in Washington, D.C. since April of this year. So there are more of them coming into the city than us moving into the city.
Let's say go back 3 years before the asylum seekers. Was there not black people in part with the gentrification? Blacks moving into those available spaces that's been gentrified. Blacks that's owned businesses and companies that's doing the remodeling, the rehabbing themselves. Is that not true?
You do have some blacks doing that, but their numbers are dramatically lower than other ethnic groups that are moving to the city.
Well, have you ever thought that maybe it's because they don't want to move there? Is there any signs on the walls?
And you're right, there are some people that do not want to move.
No blacks are wanting
to.
Is there any posting saying blacks cannot do this and cannot do that?
No, there's no posting that says it.
Well,
Brother
Ellie, that's because they don't want to, man. They don't
Let me answer his question, because see, the thing is, Brother Ellie, you don't give him the proper knowledge that he needs. Here's the deal. The only reason blacks is out of D.C., and I want you to hear this.
In Chicago, because it's coming in next.
Now, here's the thing. When you don't have an identity and you try to love everybody, And you're looking to try and fit in. See, you don't control the space you occupy. When blacks had 70% of the population, they were supposed to take control of the space they occupy. And you only do that when you have an identity. And you only do that when you go in and you take control of what you have. They should have brought up everything in there. But when you don't have an organized around your race, see, you're looking to diversify, and you're looking.
Your question, L.A., because you're running out of time. You've been talking. I've been holding since 9:45.
Let him speak. Then when he finishes, I'll let you have the mic. Go ahead, Beaver.
Well, that's why, because when you don't have an identity, see, you don't have the vision to say, well, look, this is where I'm planting my flag. This is what I'm going to do and put my money together to make sure that I pass the proper laws. And I invest in these neighborhoods to make sure that we stay here and nobody else can get in. See, everybody else practice that. When a Hispanic comes in, they form barrios. And they set up associations and organizations to make sure that, hey, look, when we come in here, we're going to control this space. But when you don't have an identity and you all in diversity and integration and all of this stuff, see, you're going to lose your spot. People are going to move you out. And that's what happened in D.C. But see, when you have a person that's talking over there and another person that
Don't worry
that
about me. Just talk about this identity. You say that all the time. You know, here's the thing. No black family is going to stay in an area that's got terrible schools for their kids to be going to. They ain't going to do it. No black functional family is going to stay in a neighborhood where the kids can't go out and play. You can't walk from here to there without getting mugged and robbed. And if they wanted to find out who they were, all they got to do is pull their driver's license out of their pocket and read it. That old stuff about identity is crazy. Talk about that all the time. I hear that word in these conversations 50 times. And if it was so prominent, why is it that it's only coming from one source on this particular program? You don't hear people talking that mess.
Well, see, you just made my point. I said you got to control the space you occupy. There you go. See, you're making my point.
You control your house. You control your house. How is blacks going to buy up any damn thing and keep others from coming into it?
You're making my point.
Let me give you the scenario. Blacks build a town. They build schools. The schools are ratchet. People don't move. Same thing, they moved out of Jackson, Mississippi. They ran from Jackson, Mississippi. Bad schools. I'm just naming one thing. North St. Louis, Ferguson, Florida. You know who's taking the kids and showing them another life? It's a white church out in Chesterfield. L.A., I sent you the article. A white church that's teaching these young black aviation. It's not forever because they don't have the skill to master the math that's needed to know. That's why black other families leave. Black family left Ferguson and moved to Florida, which at one time was all white. White seen them come and they ran. Also, blacks ran. That's the identity. Identity is your country, your tongue, your wants and desires. Mine is a United States citizen.
Well, you're making my point. You control the environment you live in. If you got bad schools, you build your own schools. Hey, if you got an area, you're supposed to improve it. But you can't do it one house at a time. You got to do it as a group of people. And that's what other racial ethnic groups does. And the thing is, you're making all my points. I don't have to
they
say
don't
all
have
that because
the groups don't.
Oh, well, wait a minute,
you know,
wait a minute. I got something here. If y'all are still around, to chime in on, and it tails into what you guys are talking about right now.
Hold it.
I'm switching cities now. I'm going from D.C. to Chicago. Migrants bused to Sanctuary City of Chicago are now promptly shipped off to the suburbs of Chicago. So apparently this is going on in some major cities.
And you know, you made a point that L.A., Afghanistan that just been shipped to the St. Louis area was not put in the city where there's vacant land and everything else. They were sent out to Chesterfield, very prominent area. Chesterfield, Bosnians when they came in, 80,000 of them. They was put over in South St. Louis. They wasn't put in North St. Louis with other blacks. Africans, when they move in that area, they go out to Maryland Heights. They go way over to Belleville, Illinois, going past East St. Louis into Belleville, Illinois. Go ahead, Viata.
Hey, look, I want to say this here before Viata get in. Where did they get the money? If they're coming over here, they didn't come over here with the money. Where are they getting the funding? I just want to know, because when these immigrants come in here, they come with just the clothes on their backs. So where are they getting the money to make these moves?
Relief organizations. Relief organizations.
And the government.
Government, I don't know if the government getting this.
It reads, a group of over 100 migrants from the southern border were moved to Illinois suburb after being welcomed in Chicago, an action that is reportedly frustrating local officials. The migrants are staying at the Hampton Inn in Burr Ridge, a Holiday Inn in Countryside, according to WGN-TV in Chicago. An estimated 300 migrants have been bused from Texas to Chicago in the last 2 weeks. Viata,
bunch of migrants arrived in Chicago and unloaded. And just about time the last one got off, 50 more got back on, so they were tired of the gunfire. That's why come they start putting them out in the suburbs away from them Negroes.
Viata, any comment?
You know, I told you, L.A., that's a political game. I'm just passing the popcorn on. That's just entertainment from all this politics. But I do want to answer Beasley's point about I'm going to be annihilated. And I guess it sounds like Beasley's, quote, a Christian. And I wonder if he thinks when he gets to heaven, he going to hear the words, well done, my black servant. The reality for me is this, Beasley. I don't need your prayers, for one. I have enough intimate connection with the universe, the cosmic energy, the creator, God, whatever you want to call it. I have intimate connection. And the reality is this. When you think telepathically, that someone calls you and you say, oh, I was just thinking about you, and they call you, that's called fourth and fifth dimensional reality. That's where we're going. You know what's going to be annihilated is this physical reality, focusing on the physical reality of what you see, black faces and all these things in your third dimension. That's what's being annihilated. We're all being moved into another dimension. And you people like you are kicking and screaming
because you want to be able to see and feel everybody, black skin and all that. But the reality is we have to move into a more energetic, metaphysical existence. That's what consciousness is all about. What you're talking about.
Can I ask
about
you something, Deanna?
You are unconscious when you keep talking about black people this, black people that. That's a third dimensional reality. We ain't staying there for long. That's going to be erased.
That's right. That's right. And did you say he said he was going to pray for you, Deanna?
Yes, he did. He's going to pray because
I'm
going to be
annihilated. Let me tell you something.
All my thinking.
Let me tell you something. Don't have why is he giving away prayers? It must not be working for him. I don't blame you. Run for him like you're saving your life. Only people give away stuff that ain't no good. And if they ain't working for him, why do he figure that you need them?
Oh my goodness!
Well, you know what? I'll say this, and the thing is, when that day comes. And it's happening every day. All you got to do is just keep living. That's all I got to tell you. And the other thing is this. If we don't, as people, form ourselves as a group to do the things that we need to do for ourselves, see, there's no space for people that can't take care of themselves. And look, you can do it individually, but I'm telling you this. The only group that's going to survive is the people that do for self and to make sure that they can take care of themselves and practice the laws of nature, self-preservation and survival of the fittest. Now, it sounds funny to you guys now, but the deal is this. See, the Jews thought that too before World War II, and you see what happened to them. The Indians was of no use to the white man. You see what happened to them. Now, Sister Viata never told me what tribe she belongs to, but she see what happened to her people and what's continuing to happen to her people. But if you want to stick your head in the sand, hey, look, have at it. But for the rest of us, we need to go in and we need to find out and we need to cultivate our space and make sure that we protect it. And that's all I got to say because, look, this stuff you talking, see, it's funny to you now, but if you don't get serious about trying to do for self and produce something, you got a problem. That's all I got to say.
And on that note, Beezy, you got the last word for the day. Everyone have a good weekend.